Hello and welcome to How to Save the World. I forgot the name of the podcast for just a second, could you tell? My name's Tim Batt.
And I'm Waveney.
And the point of this podcast is to talk about sustainability in a way that is uplifting and solutions focused. And we want to give you the good information, but also couple that with what you can do to change the not so great situation that's happening in a bunch of different areas of our world and environment at the moment. And today we're doing things slightly differently, because normally when we do the deep dives, we are utilizing the very knowledgeable and experienced brain of Waveney, because she's been in the sustainability space for a long time.
But today...
Today we're not. Today...
We're utilizing the...
It's my job. It instills a lot of faith.
No, I'm really looking forward to today, because... Oh, it's really nice. I just feel like I'm on holiday or something. Just get to ask some probably quite basic questions, because what are we doing today, Tim?
Hopefully I can answer them, because I do have a new appreciation for all of the work you do on these deep dive episodes. So today we are talking about mobile phones specifically, and a lot of the things about mobile phones you can extrapolate a little bit into things like laptops and, you know, tablets and consumer electronics and technology at large. But I wanted to hone in on mobiles and smartphones, because they're so ubiquitous, and I am a big tech guy. I'm a big geek. I love technology.
Love it.
And so I wanted to sort of use this lens of sustainability to look at this thing that I like and go...
It's really important, actually, because it's like... Mostly so far we've been doing particular issues around sustainability, but the other way of looking at this is to get a topic like this, and it could be anything. It could be ballpoint pens or balls that you bounce when you play basketball or whatever. It just doesn't matter what it is.
That's a basketball for you non-sports fans at home.
Yeah, it's so sporty, Waveney, crikey. And just to apply that thinking and join it all up.
Yeah. Now, the first thing that I want to open with regarding mobile phones is because I think there's this temptation, and this was in all of the videos and the reports and the articles that I was reading. It's just like, oh, this is so terrible. Like, phones are so bad for the environment, da 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 da. And they are, and we'll get into all of that. But I first, because it's important to highlight with these things, there's a reason why mobile phones are so popular and smartphones are so ubiquitous all over the world. They're really amazing. They're super amazing. This is a device which literally did not exist 15 years ago. And now slightly more of the world's population has a mobile phone than has access to clean drinking water.
Really?
I'll say that again.
Wow.
Slightly more people have a smartphone than have access to clean drinking water readily.
Man.
How crazy is that?
It is crazy. And I remember being, what was it? In the late 90s, going to myself, wouldn't it be cool if, because we're just getting into digital cameras, so quite a few people carrying around digital cameras, and then I guess it was, I don't know when it was, early 2000s, and people carrying around phones and before smartphones. And I just remember thinking, wouldn't it be cool if you could have the camera and the phone together? That would be just awesome. What an amazing... And people were like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. And I was like, wow, what a cool reality. Bring that on.
And now we're living in it. And 7 billion smartphones have been created since then in the decade and a half that we've had them. They reckon, according to a report I was reading, there's 3 billion connected smartphones in the world right now, connected to a mobile network, so that are actively being used. And if you think about what they've enabled us to do, we can... communicate with people by video instantaneously on the other side of the world relatively cheaply, or kind of for free if you're on Skype using Wi-Fi. They are our mapping system now. We've got an integrated GPS system on our phones, which help us navigate anywhere we're going. If we're like walking around on holiday in some foreign country, or we're driving at home and trying to get somewhere, it tells us what the traffic's doing. Our cameras have been replaced by putting these incredible sensors in the phones. Like, they've just done so many things. They've kind of replaced TVs for a lot of people. I haven't had a TV in my flat for like 7 years or something. Everyone's just got tablets and their phones. We email on them, so it's kind of our work machine as well. And they've assisted the democratization of a lot of people as well, most famously with the Arab Spring. That a lot of, like, certainly not all of it, but a lot of it was aided by technology and smartphones, being able to share videos of what was happening, and Twitter was able to organize protests and people coming together to overthrow dictators. At the moment, that sort of video footage approach, citizen journalism is holding, in particular, police officers in America to account a lot at the moment.
Yeah, it is actually, isn't it? It's phenomenal what's been caught. You think, why are they still doing it? When so many phones around.
Exactly. And it's, I think that whole, the ubiquity of everyone having a smartphone with video capabilities has brought in, like, body cams and stuff from the police. And so there's all of these different areas where it really has had a cool impact.
Not to mention podcasts.
Not to mention podcasts.
Exactly.
So true. So the question then becomes, how do you make a smartphone? That's what we want to talk about first. There's basically three stages to it, to cell phones, if you look at their impact on the environment. There's how do you make one, what's it like while you use it, and then the
chucking it
out, yep, waste part of it. So how do you make a smartphone?
Do you make a smartphone, Tim?
Well, to build the universe, what is it? What's that saying by, I think it's Stephen Hawking, if you want to make an apple pie from scratch, first you must create the universe. Oh, sort of like that. First, we got to get the elements. So in smartphones, there are these elements called rare earth minerals, or rare earth elements. There's 17 rare earth elements. These rare earth elements have really distinct characteristics related to their ability to conduct heat and electricity. They've got certain properties around magnetism, around vibration. So there's specific elements that are needed to do the cool and wonderful things that mobile phones can do. And phosphorescence is another quality which is inherent in these elements that we need to put into the phones to make them do what they do. And getting them is very, very difficult. The rare bit doesn't always refer to the fact that there's not a lot of them in the Earth's crust, but it refers to the fact that they're not concentrated. So you get these tiny little specks dispersed over a wide area.
Yeah.
So if you think about gold, for example, gold is one of the elements which is critical for all circuitry. And we use comparatively quite a lot of it in smartphones because it has an incredibly high conductivity. That's why it's used for wiring and microprocessors. So if you think about gold, often, you know, when you're panning for gold, like in a river or something.
Yeah, I know, when I'm panning for gold. Yeah.
And you get a little fleck in your pan.
Yeah.
And so you've got to, like, go through so much water to accumulate enough. Gold's not the best example because you can hit, like, a gold vein where there's a whole mass of it. But with a lot of these rare earth elements, they're very dispersed. So you've got to figure out a way to kind of capture a massive amount of rock and process it to get these things like tungsten and the other elements out of there. So the way that they do that often is open pit mining, which is terrible. Wowee. What struck me about open pit mining when I started looking into this, which is how we harvest a lot of the rare earth elements, is that I was looking around at these videos on YouTube and they did not have a lot of hits. So it really struck me that everyone is using the product of this process, and I suspect very few people ever think about it.
Yeah.
And it is insane. So you've got to take this enormous swath of land, and I didn't write down the numbers because I thought it would be one of those, like, I couldn't think of the numbers, and the numbers were right in front of me, but it's like kilometers and kilometers, hectares and hectares, these huge, enormous land masses.
Like all added up, or just one would be?
One pit.
No
it's like,
way.
It's just these huge swaths of land.
Gosh, a hectare is massive. That's like kind of like a football field, isn't it?
Oh, these open pits that we're looking at are like multiple football fields because they've got these huge diggers and bits of equipment that are sitting on them, and it's unbelievably massive. So they're usually in developing countries because that's just always the case. Although I'll kind of get to that later because there was some mining in America, but then China kind of got involved and did it cheaper and drove down the price of all the elements. So all the places in America had to close up shop. So they move into an area where they can find some of these elements. And first of all, they have to clear all the land. So if it's not just rock, if there's anything on top of it, trees, some sort of habitat, some wildlife, anything. They just have to clear all of that away completely. And then they just start digging through the rock. They have these massive explosives that they put in to blow everything up.
Yep.
And then if you've ever seen a big quarry, it looks like that. Just this huge quarry with trucks going in and out and diggers. And it destroys everything. Really caustic materials that they have to use to process the rock to extract these minerals out.
That's interesting. It's kind of like point A is destroying habitats on a huge scale. Point B is these toxins that are now, what do you do with them?
Yes.
I think it's partly that scale thing that gets me, because without scale, you can say, well, you know, these phones are very useful and we've got to live, you know, we'll have to have an impact of some sort. Sure, it's hole in the ground, it's not ideal, but I think it's for people to understand the scale of how we are affecting on as a whole of the whole of the planet. Some enormous percentage of the planet is affected by our industry.
Yeah.
And it's like we are really squeezing the habitats.
And it's that whole economic concept of an externality, which doesn't even count. It's been hidden away from us and hidden away from the sort of accounting of it. And yet there's these people who are being incredibly negatively affected or killed as a result of these processes. So they have to use things like acid baths to do the initial processing of some of these rocks. And there's various stages, and the different elements have different processes to extract as well. So the open pit mining is not for all of these elements that they grab. I think the elements that are commonly gathered with that style of extraction is copper, silver, palladium, aluminium, platinum, tungsten, lead, tin, and gold, which I think all of those are in mobile phones in some way, shape, or form. Then there's cobalt, and cobalt is an element essential to lithium ion batteries, which are used in anything that holds a charge these days, really. The alternative is alkaline batteries, which aren't really in vogue anymore because you can't recharge them.
Okay.
So lithium ion batteries are in rechargeable AAs, they're lithium ion. Your mobile phone that you've got, that's lithium ion. If you look at high capacity batteries in a car like a Tesla, or Tesla actually have developed these, you might have seen the, I think they're called power walls or something, big, huge power bank you use in your house in conjunction with a solar panel.
Yep.
So you can store that power somewhere to use it through the day and night. That's all lithium ion. And an essential ingredient of lithium ion batteries is cobalt. And cobalt is an element, the majority of which is mined from the Copper Belt region of the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is not a place famous for its human rights championing and good working conditions. So according to The Guardian, and I'll have a link to this in the show notes if you want to get quietly depressed for a bit but educate yourself a bit more, there are child labourers as young as 6 years old in these mines that are earning 65 US cents a day in like back-breaking conditions, extracting cobalt out of these mines. It's really, really dangerous. If they find a place where there's a lot of cobalt, they'll just start digging in these mines, and they're going completely underground in these very tight conditions. The mines do often collapse.
It's just out of sight, out of mind, isn't it?
It completely is.
You've got your phones all lined up in the shop. You're picking it out and you're looking at the features and
totally.
And that's the backstory.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does bear thinking about just for a couple of seconds, like how we're getting all these bits and pieces to put together. Yes.
Can I ask, is this episode going to have any sort of a solution, or is it more that it's just...
There's a few. Solutions, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering, you know, if the message is kind of like, this is pretty bad stuff, so therefore just try and use it less, try not to, you know, buy so much.
There's a bit of that, but there's some other stuff as well.
Cool.
But yeah, I probably should have prefaced the episode with this, because there's some super dark stuff. But if you look into anything, there's a lot of super dark stuff. But I think that it's important to not shy away from the truth of these things.
Well, I like, it's for me, it's that journey of, and if you're going to make an effort to try and do something differently, then it's like you've got to hold on to why.
That's right. And I did have a bit of a sort of conversation with myself as I was going through all of this stuff, going, man, how much of this should go in the episode? Because this is pretty grim and depressing. But the thing is, there's got to be some counter to all of the marketing that these huge companies do, because they're investing literally billions and billions of dollars every year to hide all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So the fact that it is ugly and gross and we don't want to talk about it is true, but there's got to be some countenance to the sort of marketing and advertising efforts of these huge companies that are making insane amounts of money off the back of these processes. So that's my justification. So this episode, some of it will be a bummer. We're already quarter of an hour in. It's already a bummer. But it's important and it's the truth. So according to reset.org, 50% of these mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which most commonly produce the cobalt that goes into the batteries, half of the mines are controlled by armed groups or militias. And that is where we get tin, tantalum, which I'm not sure what that is, I have to confess, and tungsten. There's a lot of really young workers working in there, terrible conditions, terrible pay to extract the stuff out. Then we get to the manufacturing stage. The manufacturing stage is predominantly happening in China, and I'm going to use iPhones as an example purely because they're so ubiquitous and everyone kind of knows what an iPhone is. But the process I'm about to explain, you can extend to almost any cell phone. So like Samsung have a very similar system, but I just kind of went through the iPhone. So iPhones are produced in large part by a company called Foxconn. It's a Taiwanese company. If you look at the label, you'll see, and this is on pretty much all Apple products, it says designed in California, made or assembled in China. So that's their whole thing of like, you know, it's an American company, but all the manufacturing happens overseas for obvious cost reasons.
Yeah.
So Foxconn employs over 1 million people, just that one company, and they make PlayStations, Kindles, Nokias, iPads, iPhones, Nintendo consoles. They make consumer electronics, and they've gotten very, very rich doing it. And they've got a history of really low wages and terrible working conditions, and they've been in the news a few times. And this is kind of like, I'm not a big Apple dude myself. I don't like have Apple products, but the good thing about Apple being so brand heavy and rating themselves so much and like having these huge marketing campaigns where they sort of elevate themselves to such high esteem and a high level is that when bad things happen associated with Apple related suppliers, people really give them shit about it, which is a good thing.
It's true. I've noticed that too. Yeah. Well, I think because you're right. They're exactly that. They're, in terms of their brand story,
yes.
They've put themselves out there
they
as
have.
Being a bit better, a bit cleaner, a bit
They have put themselves
smarter.
On such a pedestal that it's like, we are this innovative, world-changing, world-improving company that makes products that makes everyone's lives better. And that's why they're so expensive. So then when they do get caught out, people do take notice and a lot of articles get written and they get a lot of media pressure. And Apple, I have to confess, do respond to this and they have improved stuff. So
It's interesting. I have to admit as well that while we're admitting things, that I've totally been caught out, I think, by that Apple story. Like we were early uptakers back in the whatever it was.
Yeah.
Late 90s and Apple all the way through.
It's
and
not
thinking,
all
thinking this is cool,
they're
cool
an,
brand.
They're
know?
An incredible company.
Yeah.
And they've got incredible ambitions. But like
but yeah,
anything the, that I, big, it's complicated.
Oh, I do remember hearing those first negative stories. Would it have been about 10 years ago or whatever, maybe more.
You're absolutely
and
right.
Just
it
going,
was 10 years ago.
Oh, is that right? Does that fit? Was that a thing?
It's not very Apple news.
Exactly.
So
it's not very Apple.
Probably what you're talking about is in 2010, there was these reports came out that a whole lot of Foxconn employees were attempting suicide at the factories. And one of the things that got a lot of media attention is the initial response to this is Foxconn started putting nets outside the windows in their factories. Like that was their reply to it. Yeah. It just absolutely nuts. And this prompted a lot of reporting into their labor practices because they're the main supplier for Apple for their manufacturing. And it was reported that there was a 28-year-old guy who died after working 34 hours in a row and people working 70 hours a week. And they were like, Foxconn was falling afoul of Chinese labor laws, which are not the most stringent in the world, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And they've made a whole lot of improvements because of all of this media attention. And Apple has demanded a lot of things of Foxconn to ensure that those working conditions improve. The problem is not completely fixed. And I hope that there is just continued public and media pressure. And not just on Apple. I'm just picking Apple because they're a big, obvious example. This is the case, I would say, with almost all mobile companies, mobile manufacturers. But
is it kind of similar to when we did the clothing episode and we were talking about the factory conditions, just like really low wages, very competitive because of the, essentially because of the price points and the profit that people are wanting to suck out. And
absolutely.
Just, you push and you push and that's the part of it that will give.
Yeah.
Because if they don't do it that cheaply, then you find someone else that will.
And similar to textiles as well, there is some... This is more to do with the extraction process. I don't think this is as big a problem in the factories, but there's a lot of harmful chemicals that they're dealing with as well, which carcinogenic, cause cancer and awful stuff like that. So
all these people doing things for us.
I know. It's happening to bring the things to us, but we don't know about it. So as I said, this problem isn't completely fixed by any stretch. Just a few months ago before the launch of the iPhone 11, it was revealed that Foxconn broke Chinese labor laws. By having a huge amount of, what are they had a special word for it, but temporary workers who don't have the same rights. So 50% of their factory were these temporary workers and Chinese labor laws only allow for 10%. So the good thing is that these things are coming out a little bit, and who knows the stuff that's not being reported, right? But this Chinese labor watchdog also found that workers were putting in 100 hours of overtime per month, which is well in excess of China's legal limit of 36. The factory didn't provide workers with adequate protective equipment. Student workers were being forced to work overtime during peak season. And the factory wasn't reporting work injuries. And this is stuff that's sort of like part and parcel of setting all of these Chinese factories up to be this low-cost labor force. To engineer all of the world's electronics at the cheapest possible price. Like, there is a price to be paid for that, and this sort of stuff is it. This is the human cost of it. So worker conditions for these big suppliers like Foxconn have improved a little bit, and Apple were making strides in some other areas as well to put a huge amount of pressure on their suppliers. A big one is on their energy. So Apple made the decision, I think it was 2 years ago, that they were going to go 100% renewable energy, and they managed to do it. But the thing is with Apple is that only one quarter of their whole like energy footprint or carbon footprint is by their own offices. Three quarters of it, their devices, it's represented by their suppliers who put the stuff together. So they have made Foxconn and their other manufacturer called TSMC commit to using 100% renewable power, and they're not doing it yet, but they have committed to doing it. And Apple have said that if these suppliers don't reach the 100% renewable levels, that they'll drop them as suppliers. So there is some positive ways that these companies are putting pressure down on improving conditions for these people, and it's like it's only because of public and media attention. They would not ever even think to do this stuff, in my opinion, without this kind of attention.
Power to the people.
And look, here's something that I want to talk about a little bit, because Apple and Samsung have put out all of these reports about how they're certified in all these different areas and they're making all these strides to improve ethical conditions and things like the renewable power commitment from Apple. And that's great and all.
And
Samsung admittedly made strides in changing their packaging quite a lot to make it a lot less harmful, which is good. But they keep making these design decisions, which are purely financial and explicitly bad for the environment by doing so. And one of the biggest trends is it's called the unibody design, which is something that Apple started and everyone's copied. Unibody is... basically that it's all like one piece out of a molded bit of aluminium. And what it means is that the battery is completely encased and it's not removable for the user. So back in the day, you could the thing that craps out in the cell phone is the battery. And if you swap out the battery, you've essentially got a new phone. There's two things that are stopping you being able to keep your smartphone for ages at the moment. One is the denigration of the battery over time because you're constantly recharging it. So there's a physical, chemical limitation to how much you can do that before it breaks down. And the second is the updates that get forced through.
I was going to say, it's got to be the updates because that's one of my old iPhones crapped out because of that. We updated it and there was all just toast after that.
And there is a real back and forth argument between Apple / other mobile companies and the consumer, I would say, about whether or not this is necessary. So there was this big debacle about 18 months ago where Apple got on hot water because people were finding out that as soon as they would get an update, like their phone would, it would slow down. Yep. It would slow down over
totally
time.
Totally happened to me.
And so I think from memory, first of all, Apple said that's not happening, it's fake, which is what they usually respond to their big scandals with. They go, first of all, nah, it's a tie. It might be affecting like 0.1% of our users, but this isn't a widespread issue. And then they get forced to do an investigation and then they come up with a reason as to why things are happening the way they are. And they said the reason why phones were slowing down was to protect the longevity of the battery so that it would slow down the processor, the CPU, so that it wouldn't just run through the battery instantly and you'd have a dead phone in 3 hours. So it would cripple the performance of the phone. And people didn't really buy it, and I don't really buy it either, because what it does is it leads to this incredibly frustrating user experience where you just go, oh, I'm going to just buy a new phone.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, people replace their phones on average every 21 months, which is just way too often for this model.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Who are those people?
This is a world average.
Do you do that? I don't do that.
I might have. Well, there's a lot of like systems that are encouraging you to do it. So like the telecommunications companies that you've got your contract with, they will give you discounts and interest-free and all that stuff on a rolling 24-month basis. So a lot of people will sign up to a contract for 2 years. They'll get their discount on their phone, and then it will come up for renewal. They'll be able to get $400 off the new iPhone or whatever. Gosh. So they'll roll over into another one.
I think we are, just take it back and look at that big picture, so used to it. It's like we're the frog in the water just slowly getting warmer and we don't realize it's time to jump out because obviously we're so clever. We've got amazing technology. Like you said at the start of the episode, just how incredible these phones are. Like we're so clever.
Yeah.
We could easily create a device that we could have for life.
We have, which I will get to. I'll get to that in a moment. There is an amazing company in the Netherlands who are doing just this. So, but I want to ream out Apple for one other thing, because this is just my like geek sword and shield coming out now. But the other like really cynical design decision that Apple made, which really pisses me off, is they removed the headphone jack. And because Apple did it and they're so cool, a lot of the other companies just followed in their wake and they were like, oh yeah, we don't have headphone jacks either. And the reason, in my opinion, it's true, but I have to say that, in my opinion, why they did that is because Apple purchased an audio company called Beats, which make Bluetooth headphones. So Bluetooth headphones have a battery in them, which means they die and you have to replace them every X amount of time, and they're more delicate and you can like build newer models. So it's this other product that you have to keep replacing and buying a new version of every, whatever, 3 years. So Apple bought Beats, huge Bluetooth headphone company, and then got rid of the headphone jack so they could sell more Bluetooth headphones. That's the simple truth of why they did it. And they can say whatever they want about it being a brave design decision and being futuristic, whatever the hell they want to say. It was about selling headphones to you for too much money and creating more products that you don't need in the process. Wired headphones last kind of forever. Mm. If you get one, well, like the wire will crap out, but there's a lot of headphones you can get where you can just replace the wire with a $10 cable and they'll last kind of forever. But not Bluetooth ones because they got a battery that breaks down. So Apple can, you know, keep singing the song about how they're making these environmental improvements and stuff, but all their design decisions really do show that they've got a financial model which is completely based on you buying a new version of their products.
Designed obsolescence.
Exactly. Every 18 to 24 months, you've got to get the new iPhone, the new MacBook, da-da-da. And the other thing is, in the last, I'd say about 4 years, there haven't been huge improvements in mobile phones. There just haven't been. Just as a little like tech reviewer bit of recommendation for you. Don't, there's absolutely no need to buy a high, like the highest tier phone anymore. The mid-range phones are so good. Don't spend like a grand to get the top tier one, because you can get 95% of the result right. by spending half that money these days.
Yeah.
Because all those incredible features trickle down. And there just hasn't been a lot of advancements in the last 4 years.
Didn't the last time the iPhone get released, that was the first time that they had like slightly less sales, or there's kind of like that announcement, we've hit peak smartphone?
It wouldn't surprise me, because they now are having to come up with essentially gimmicks.
Yeah.
That parade is new like features.
We've actually got it now. We've got the ideal. We've got the phone and the camera all the, in the one place.
The cameras are really good. It's like everything will always improve, but the cameras are pretty good. The one thing that lets them down, which it would be great to see some movement on, is batteries, but that's like a physical limitation of the kind of chemistry we use to make them. So let's talk about the third sort of stage of a phone's life.
Chucking it out.
So e-waste is a massive problem everywhere in the world, but particularly in New Zealand. Every Kiwi creates an average of 19 kg of e-waste a year.
Can we define e-waste? Is it everything with a plug? That's what I'm used to. Yeah, I think when you're dropping it off at a recycling centre, that's often the definition.
Right, if it's got a plug?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, that's a good working definition for us then. That's good. Now, that's actually going up. It's expected that by the year 2030, which is only 10 years away, that will go up by 7 kg. So
it's going in the wrong direction.
From 19 to 26 kg per person. And that's according to the Ministry for the Environment.
It's like a freight train, isn't it? Just
There's a lot of it. And I mean,
a lot of momentum.
It does sort of make sense, because it's some other products are getting replaced by electronics in our life. So, for example, we don't have as many books, so maybe there's less books going to landfill. But now we have Kindles, which we're throwing away. Mm. And as much as... Now, I have to preface this fact by saying this was in a press release, and I kept trying to follow where the study was, and I couldn't find the ultimate conclusion of it. But it was quoted by the Whanganui Council. So I'm going to say it, but with an asterisk.
Yeah.
According to this that I read, this press release, as much as 98% of New Zealand's household electronics and e-waste ends up in landfills, which is bad, because they contain things like lead and mercury, which leaches into the soil. It's incredibly poisonous for other animals and in the water, for fish and algae and stuff like that. But also lead and mercury is incredibly poisonous for humans and can cause things like death and severe mental and developmental disabilities, which is what happened in Flint, Michigan, when their water supply got tainted with lead. So it's a big problem. So some solutions. So recycling with e-waste, unfortunately, as we've covered in some previous episodes, some waste is just shipped to poorer countries, and because of things like lead and mercury, this can be incredibly harmful for vulnerable people. There's a lot of women and children working in these developing countries that are disassembling parts, and sometimes they just get burned or sort of chucked into big like dumps, essentially their own version of a landfill anyway. It's just happening somewhere else. So there's, I want to speak briefly about this really interesting Wellington-based firm who have reached a stage that they're calling pre-commercial. They've gone through all these different tests. They're called Mint Innovation New Zealand. And what they reckon they've done is cracked this process of getting e-waste, breaking it down. So they put it in a huge blender and they make this kind of powder out of it all. And then they put it into a water solution. And then they use these specific microorganisms, which then collect the individual elements. And through this extraction method, using the special microbes, they can reclaim things like the gold, the tungsten, the silver out of these electronic components. And they're doing it non-toxically. So it's this really like powerful... If they really, I'm always dubious about these claims because, you know, being in the tech world, you'll constantly see these companies that, you know, 4 years prior came out with this thing going, this is going to revolutionize this industry. And it's like, oh, yeah, they just filed for bankruptcy. But Mint Innovation have gone through a lot of the kind of implementation cycles are ready. They've done extensive testing. They've had over $5 million in funding. They've scaled it up to an extent where they're seemingly at the moment just on the precipice of rolling this thing out on a commercial basis, and they've got international ambitions as well. So they want to be wherever e-waste is collected in the world, and it's such a cleaner way of dealing with these e-waste materials and reclaiming the finite rare earth minerals that we need to hold on to, because we will run out of them at some point.
Mm. This is actually, we just did the waste energy episode, and we talked about landfills better or not. And one of the bizarre reasons why landfills are better is because we will still have those resources in the future when we need them, and we'll be able to mine our landfills for all of the e-waste that we've chucked in there and get out these rare resources again.
Yeah. But
in fact, already there are some rare minerals that there's more of in landfills than any other deposits
that
in the world.
That makes sense. So, and is that like versus incinerating?
Well, yeah, because if you incinerate it, then it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that must get hot to be able to like destroy some of these elements down. It's nuts. So keep an eye out for mint innovation.
Sounds amazing.
Sounds
and
really impressive.
And for now, did you come across places that people can take their e-waste?
It's a good question. Oh, yeah, I did. Yes, I did. And you see, what are they called? Hold on, let me find the facts on this. I'm surrounded by paper, folks.
I've got a couple while you're looking.
Oh, is your one called Remobile?
No.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Actually, what about Starship?
So this is Remobile.
Oh.
So Remobile, now, as far as I can tell, they're actually like the industry answer to the solution, which is often what they do to prevent the government stepping in and having a more stringent solution to it. But, you know, this thing exists,
yeah,
so
right.
It's good.
Yeah.
So they are certified by the Ministry for the Environment, this organization called Remobile, and it's a partnership with Spark, Vodafone, 2degrees, and Noel Leeming. And they have, I think they must have to have collection points at all of their stores. There's 465 drop-off points around the country.
Well, it's a good network.
To collect your old phones. So you clear all your data off, you take your SIM card out, and you put them in. And depending on, they've even got free post. So if you go, I haven't written down their website, but if you Google Remobile New Zealand, you'll find the program.
And what sort of places are their drop-off points? Like schools
shops.
Or malls?
Shop? Oh, well, the ones that I, like Spark or Vodafone or 2degrees shops.
Oh, the places that you'd buy your phone in the first place.
There's over 400 of them, so I'm sure they've got they've probably got school collection spots in that as well. But you can, they've got a map, you type in where you are, it'll give you the closest one. You can even free post your phone, so it doesn't cost you anything. You just buy the envelope and you put free post and the address on there and send it off. I'll put a link in the show notes, actually, so you can see Remobile's website. And depending on what condition the phone is in will determine what they do with it. So if it's in pretty good working order, they can resell it either just as it is or refurbish it by sending it back to the manufacturer. They fix what needs to be fixed. So say, for example, you've got a cracked screen, which seems like end of life for a device that is all screen. They can send that away, get the screen fixed if it's not too much money, then resell it as a refurbished unit. And I buy a lot of refurbished electronics. It's a good way to go. They actually, some people shy away from it because they're like, oh, it's secondhand. But in actual fact, refurbished units go through in some ways more extensive testing than stuff coming off the factory floor, because they've got to be so highly quality controlled to make sure that the refurbishment happened correctly. So I think it's and they all come with at least 3-month warranties usually as standard refurbished units, and you save a lot of money buying stuff that
way.
Yeah,
I think that's the way we've gone as well. And we get like years out of our stuff.
They're just as good as new, and in some cases better in a way, because they're more stringently sort of looked at.
Actually, if you've got an X amount of money to spend, like say you've got $500, then you will get it better, won't you? Because if you're buying a phone new and you're paying $500 versus something that's refurbished that is still $500, then that's a better product, right?
If
better
you're
quality.
Buying a refurbished one?
Yeah, but you're still spending the same amount of money.
Yeah, yeah,
you're
definitely.
Getting a better product for that $500.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there's some trade, like the warranty is less than a brand new product, so there's some trade-offs to be made, but I do it. I think it's great.
And
I'm a big nerd.
You're cool.
Listen to me. So Remobile, you basically donate your phone to them and then they will resell it. But all of the money goes to Sustainable Coastlines. And they used to have a program with Starship that I don't think exists anymore where the money went there, but now it goes to Sustainable Coastlines. So not only are you dealing with the phone in a responsible way, and if the phone isn't in workable order, they still take it and they will break it down properly and recycle it to the best standards that they can at the current moment. So all the money that they get from that goes to Sustainable Coastlines, and that's a commitment they have to keep up with as part of their certification. So at least it's kind of helping some other bit of the country.
Awesome.
But the real solution to this is going to come from design changes. And so there's this company called Fairphone, which I absolutely love. And this is like the future, right? This is the future of everything. It's these innovative companies that go, they look at an industry and they go, this is cooked. So many of these devices rolling around. There's so much money being spent and no one's considering these aspects. So Fairphone are a private company. They're Dutch based and they've been around for maybe about 10, oh, probably less than 10 years now, maybe 7 or 8 years. And they have a commit, like they started as a response to in the smartphone market, making an ethical phone from a social point of view, from an environmental point of view, and from a consumer point of view. So what Fairphone have focused on is, first of all, at the kind of getting the elements to put in the components part, seeking the highest possible certification for ethical extraction and ethical mining that they can. And they're constantly trying to, with each model of the phone, they're up to the third version, to better their supply chains and get higher certifications to make sure that people are getting paid appropriately, that they're working in way more safe working conditions than is usual, and just trying to elevate that whole bit of the pipeline. They also have a real commitment to looking at the manufacturing process. So the factory workers who assemble their phones, they've got way higher certifications than is the norm. So that bit's elevated as well. And the whole design of the Fairphone is that it's modular and it's just amazing. So they ship this phone to you with a screwdriver and you can take it apart and replace each individual module. So you can replace the battery, you can replace the camera, you can replace the screen for yourself. And they don't cost a ton of money. Like the phone itself is for... Now, I have to say, I don't think you can get it in New Zealand. I was desperately...
Oh, damn!
But this is like... This is maybe not the solution for us right now, but this is where everything should be going. They only ship in Europe at the moment, but it will just be a matter of time.
Would it work here?
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. They don't have on their website what frequencies they use, so I couldn't actually figure out if it would work on our networks. But which was very frustrating. But just take this as a cool thing that's happening, okay? In another bit of the world, rather than a thing that you can go out and buy right now. £450 for the latest one. You can replace the...
that is really reasonable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's for a modern smartphone. It's not... Well, considering all these things it does... So that's about 760 New Zealand dollars. Considering all of the things that you're buying in terms of like an ethical and environmentally sound compared to the other devices, yes, it's a really good price. And they ship it without a charger because they figure you've probably already got one. You just get the phone and the screwdriver because like it just uses a standard USB-C, which you've probably got in your house already. You can replace the camera module, for example, for €30. So if you had an iPhone or a Samsung and you cracked your camera module, like a lot of people would have to replace the whole phone.
Yeah.
But for €30, you can literally crack the thing open, swap it out yourself, boom, it's good to go. When the battery starts to go, you can buy another one of those for €30. So this phone is designed to last way longer than other smartphones.
Does it last forever in terms of the update thing? And
It can't last forever, and that is just a part of the security updates, that because it's on Android, the operating system, so it will get a lot more life out of it than your typical phone, but there are some security features which need a hardware component. So you can't download a hardware component. It needs to be part of the chip that's in the phone. So there will be, at some point, there'll be some security.
What sort of time frame are we looking at?
Like off the top of my head, I'm just making this up, but I reckon you could keep a Fairphone for like 5 years versus the normal 18 months that an iPhone will start to crap out with. Or even longer if you're...
Probably longer.
Longer if you're prepared to not have...
Because we make our iPhones last for about 4 years.
Yeah, but you might not be getting all the security updates. It's the same thing with Samsung. Like they will, or any phone. I'm just using those two companies because they're the biggest. You can technically keep them and they'll run for longer, but they might not have access to the latest security patches.
Okay. Yeah.
So if that's something that you require, you know, it'll take you up to a certain point, but then there'll be a hardware ceiling on that. But if that's not a massive concern for you, then yeah, you could probably keep this phone for way longer because you can just swap out the battery, make it last for like a decade.
And that's what I'm after. I want all this stuff to last forever.
A modular phone project has been taken up by lots of different companies. Google tried to make one and couldn't do it. They threw like a lot of time and money at it and they couldn't quite crack it. I think they gave up after a while. But this company, Fairphone, have done, like I was just blown away. Because I'd heard about Fairphone, but I'd never looked into them properly until now. And now I really want one of their phones.
Yeah, I do too.
Because of all these ethical considerations, but also because I could just have this phone that would last for ages.
Yeah.
Which is cool. So...
Oh, that was my other question. What's the functionality like? Is it... could you tell?
It's the same. It's the same. And this is with kind of all phones now. The only thing you can really make a big difference with is the photos that they take.
Yeah.
It's just and even that, the gap is closed a lot between a $400 cell phone and a $1,200 cell phone. It's not nearly as noticeable as it used to be.
And I blooming ruin the photos on mine anyway because I can't hold my iPhone for more than a second without dropping it. So I've got a life-proof case over the entire thing, which is like a plastic over there. Yeah. So.
Well, then you could be getting a way cheaper phone and keeping it for longer or get one of these Fairphones. I really hope they work in New Zealand. I'm going to look into that if the radios work and see if we can get them. But... That specific part aside, that is the direction that everything needs to be pushed into. And that Fairphone company is getting a lot of attention. And I hope that the other companies kind of go in this direction. So, look, here's the morals. Here's the solutions. Because I know this has been a pretty heavy episode. It's the same thing that we tell you with all the other stuff. You just got to buy less. Mm-hmm. You do not need, especially these days, you do not need to replace your phone every 2 years. They're not getting that much better. I know that Apple just put another camera sensor in their flagship phone. It doesn't really do anything. Okay. So phones now last a lot longer than they did before. The battery thing, unfortunately, is really an issue. And that's why there needs to be more companies making user replaceable batteries. When you are finished with your phone, never ever landfill it because there's really dangerous components in there. And apart from anything else, they can start fires as well quite easily if the lithium ion battery, the walls permeate and it creates this chemical reaction. It can create a really hot chemical fire. So don't ever do that. Go to ReMobile and donate your phone there. Like, you can hold on to your phone for a lot longer than the telcos want you to. And often they're shaking you down for money when you don't need to replace your phone anyway. So you can save money by doing that. Look at refurbished models. Look at secondhand phones instead of buying new. When you're done with yours, see if there's people in your community or sphere that might need a phone. There's no need for this endless cycle that we're in at the moment of how phones are going. The unfortunate thing is we are a little bit at the behest of these companies because they can lock us down when they do the upgrade cycles that basically brick your phone after a certain amount of time. And I have to say Apple is worse than any other company for that. So we need to support these other companies that are trying to make that better, like Fairphone, and hopefully more people do that. So there's not like great panacea silver bullet solutions.
It's a bit
to
of
this.
A primer, I reckon. It's like, get ready for this when you see it.
Yeah.
When you see it.
Exactly.
Whether it's in a year or two or three.
Yeah.
This is more have of an that, that sort one. Of understanding of why this stuff is really important.
Yeah. But you just don't need to be replacing your phone every 2 years.
You really don't. And I think it was similar with clothing or I guess everything. If you've got someone who you can give your phone to, just because you want to upgrade it after 18 months. That is not sustainability.
Yeah.
It's like that phone still exists and you're buying a new one that didn't need to be bought. Yeah. Just because you can palm it off to your younger brother or whatever,
yeah,
doesn't mean that you're saving the planet.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's not real like huge solutions for this one, Wade.
Just slow it down, eh? Slow
it down.
Yeah.
But I do think it's important that this info kind of gets out there, because especially the mining, the extraction process to get these finite elements that we're just hooning through at the moment, which have quite serious applications. There's the thing with helium. This is a little bit sidetracked, but we're running out of helium at the moment, which we really need for scientific applications, but it's because we keep putting it in balloons. There's all these scientists crying out for more helium because it's so expensive now, but we've wasted so much by putting it in party balloons.
Gosh, it's
but
funny.
They use them in like MRI machines.
That could be like the one fact that comes out of the 21st century, and that would just sum everything up.
Yeah. It's a good metaphor, isn't it? We had this incredible element that we could have used to build this next generation of technology, but we were too busy putting it in party balloons. So slow it down with the phones. Look after your batteries if you can. And just like, yeah, try and keep the phones for longer. Get them repaired instead of looking for an excuse to replace them. You know, you can just replace the screen in so many cases. And when you can't, give it to Remobile. Mm. And at least some money will be going to sustainable coastlines. And when the time is right, support Fairphone or a company like
them.
Yeah,
when the time's right. Thanks, Tim.
Modular designs to New Zealand.
It's really cool. After years and years of having my head in that sustainability space, I'm amazed at how I still have that element of kind of things appearing by magic. And I don't think about, I always go on about, there is no way when you chuck something, it lasts forever, and it's just because it's out of sight doesn't mean it's disappearing. And it amazes me that I hadn't really thought too much about, it's just such a mystery to me what's inside a phone, why it does the things. Like even when you're talking about all those 17 different elements and things, it's like, well, I just thought it was just a circuit board that did all those things.
Well, they're pretty amazing.
There's a physicality of that stuff. It comes from at least 17 different places, probably hundreds of different places by the time it's all stitched together.
I mean, there's a specific element that they have to use to make the vibration module that small. There's a specific element that goes into making the flash as efficient as it is.
And I just treat it as like, instead of the thousands of components and processes and people, like one phone, if you could see all those people lined up that had been involved in making it,
it would crowd
your room, wouldn't it? It would crowd your school assembly hall.
Absolutely,
probably.
That would be an incredible project. Yeah,
and you just pick it up like it's one thing.
Yeah,
like just an apple that's fallen off the tree or
exactly.
something. An apple.
Well, that is where mobile phones come from, folks. So now you know, and now you know what to do with them. Which is keep them and then give them to Remobile. And I will see you in the future where we've all got modular design phones that last us years and years and years and years.
Thanks, Tim.
Are based on ethical processes.
And the happy, green, wonderful future
Indeed.
That we're all heading towards.
We will catch you in the next episode of How to Save the World. If you have any feedback about this episode, if you have any questions, you can get in touch with us at facebook.com/How to Save the World. And otherwise, we'll see you in the next step.
See ya.